just thought I'd mention that. Holy mackerel. Well, I want to welcome everybody to the primary purpose branch of the world's largest lost and found department. Looks like we got a lot of lost souls that have found their way. This sounds awful up here. Does this sound as bad to you as it is to me? Ready? Okay, my name is Cliff Bishop, and I am a real alcoholic. Also a serious and very enthusiastic member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And because of a loving God I found through a 12 steps, a loving and lovely Al-Anon wife is sitting right there. The sponsor that taught me how to follow directions that came with the steps and the big bus and an awful lot of people exactly like you, I am truly enjoying my 6,205th day of sobriety, and I, by God's love, living sober. By God. And we know where the source is around here. Now, if you take 3 days out of that and divide by 365, you will come up with the number 17. And at 10:05 this morning, 17 years ago, I had my last drink, but I didn't know it. But this time, 17 years ago, I had been to a meeting, I had a sponsor, I had sipping on orange juice and honey and damn near dying and ready for a long period of misery. And thank God I did. But very briefly, how we got this group is the result of a guy named Joe living in Little Rock, Arkansas. I had heard his tape. I met him in December of 1983. I've just been back a little while. And I sat down with that man, and for the first time, with all the years I might mention, I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, or they found me in the fall of 1964. And I stayed around until the spring of 1970 and didn't learn one thing about Alcoholics Anonymous, except if you go to enough meetings and you got alcoholics laying around puking because there wasn't any place else to send them, you can go get by without drinking. And that worked real well for me for about 5.5 years. And then I decided I need to get out and improve my financial status. And anyway, my last two sobriety dates are 18 years apart, so I take sobriety dead serious today. But I'd heard this tape of Joe, and it sounded like nothing else I had seen. And the thing that amazed me was, when I came back after that 13-year sabbatical, there had been a tremendous change in the fellowship. In the 60s, we had speaker meetings. I remember the very first discussion meeting that was started by that group I was going to at that time. And I got back, and that's all we had were discussion meetings, and I thought they were wonderful, because I got to talk at every blessed one of them. And I got real good at it because I got this thing down where I was hip slick and cool enough that almost invariably after a meeting somebody would come out and say, "Cliff, I sure like what you said," and that's all they need to feed my fire for the next meeting. The only problem was I wasn't getting to feel better. I was beginning to feel worse as time went on. That's when I met Joe. And this man sat me down in the library of his place up there, and he opened a book titled Alcoholics Anonymous, and nobody had ever done that. And he started reading to me, and I'm not going to take you through the process he led me through, but in a very few moments, I came to understand exactly what alcoholism was and knew in my heart of hearts that I was an alcoholic, and this was 19 years after I showed up here pleading for help. And he and Charlie came down here. They went to the Aquarius group in April. And they did the big book come to life, and I had never sat in anything like that in my life. Well, it was Friday evening, all day Saturday and up until 1 o'clock on Sunday. And they came back and I went to another one. They came back and I went to another one. They started the Big Book Seminar, had the very first one up in Tulsa. I didn't know anything about it, but I'd been to Man to Man. I met a man named Gene Loft, and Gene's gone now, so I can mention his name. And Gene and I became very good friends at Man to Man, and he told me about this Big Book Seminar they were having in Tulsa, and I thought, this is pretty ridiculous to have to drive from Dallas to Tulsa to find out about the Big Book. I knew everything I needed to know anyhow. Well, Joe and Charlie came up to Denton to the Shalom group, and I went up to see them. And at the end of their session on Sunday morning, I said, I understand you guys are going up to Tulsa. What's it all about? And he says, you need to come up here and find out. I really would like to see you here. So I drove up there. I experienced something I have never experienced in my life. The Big Book, the 12 and 12 and the 12 concepts. They took us through the whole program of Alcoholics Anonymous, all 36 points. And when it was over, I told Gene, I said, I am amazed. I can't believe that I had to come up here and learn all I have learned about Alcoholics Anonymous. And he said, I don't know why you're amazed. He said, that's what we do in our group. And I said, you're kidding. And he said, no, I'm not. And I said, can I come up here and spend some time with him? And he said, you sure can. Well, he was traveling for Motorola at that time and have a good bit. So I called him right after Christmas. I said, when's a good time? And he gave me the weekend. And some of you may remember that there was a tremendous ice storm up in Oklahoma and in Kansas and that part in January of 1988. And that's when he was going to be there, and I said, can I make it? And he said, with God's help, you can. So I took out, and sure enough. We went over to the original Westside group the first night. With all the ice and on the streets, there were about 150 people there. Every one of them had a big butt. And the next day, we went over to Gene's group and noon, and there were about 100 people there. Most of them had big butts. They were coming from work. We went back that night, and there was about 150 people, all with big butts. And I sat there and I could not believe what I was seeing. They were studying the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'd been sitting in group therapy sessions, damn near dying. And I came back and I got with my sponsor at that time, old Paul Timpany, and told him what I'd witnessed, what I wanted to do, and he said, go for it. So we did. January 26, 1988, we had our founders meeting. We had about 50, 60 people show up. And we defined that night what it was we wanted to achieve through the primary purpose group. And our title, the name of our group, gives you a clue what we're about. We decided that on Tuesday nights we were going to study the big book. Now, I had gone to some of the groups out here and to see if we could get a big book group started. They didn't care to do that. They didn't really want to get involved in that. A few discussion meetings on the big book, but a study, no, that wouldn't work. So we got started on it. Tuesday night, we were studying the big book, and as of the last month, we have had now 12 years of studying the big book on Tuesday night. We study the text. We're not interested in hearing I, my, me, my way, my day, or this other stuff. We want to get away from what is killing alcoholics today. And I don't know if you are aware of how dismal we are. If you have a chance to see the intergroup newsletter coming out this month, I suggest you look back in the back of that because it's going to tell you, give you a clue of how well we're doing in Dallas, which compares almost identically with how badly they're doing in Houston. Bill said when he wrote the foreword to the second edition that of alcoholics who came to AA and really tried, 50% got sober and once remained that way, 25% sobered up after some relapse. As an average, 75% of us that came to AA got sober and stayed sober. They got a sponsor, and the sponsor got them into the program, which are the steps. And they recovered, and they stayed recovered. See, over the last 30 years or so, it's been amazing. I've been checking into some of our history. And we have walked away from the spiritual program of Alcoholics Anonymous, the 12 steps protected by the 12 traditions. Very, very few meetings have I been able to go to where I heard anything about the program. I've heard an awful lot about a lot of other stuff. But for the first time in the history of Alcoholics Anonymous, we have a declining membership. More than 75% finding some sobriety and people who were serious like this, Dr. Bob and Clarence Snyder and some of the others, were getting in excess of 90% documented. In excess of 90% success. All the indications that we have, and there's nothing scientific about chip and medallion sales, but they're certainly very indicative of what's happening in our fellowship. The clue today is that 90% or 80% of those people who came to meetings for 90 meetings in 90 days are no longer there on 91st day. That 90% of them are gone at the end of 1 year, only 10% of them, one out of 10, there to collect the 1 year the medallion. 10 years, 2%. We didn't want to be a part of that declining problem. That problem is bringing about the decline and the death of so many alcoholics. We wanted to get into the solution. And I was very, very pleased to find out that back in the Northeast, around Boston and that area, there's been a real wave of people getting into or starting groups and bringing the program into the group. With the announcement that this, the only reason we're here is to help alcoholics survive alcoholism. We're going to study the steps, and if you have experienced the steps, you're welcome to share, but if you have not, we're going to ask you to identify who you are, why you're here, and listen, because you don't know how to live sober or you wouldn't be coming to us. We have joined that group of people. It's not popular, and we're not here to be popular. Cliff said, you know, you're a real asshole sometimes because it's all black and white with you. And I said, you bet I did. See, I tried it, that group therapy way that damn near killed me. I've been trying for the last 16 years. I've been living by the book. Every good promise in that book has become a reality for me. That's what we're here for, to learn how they did it so we can do it the way they did it and get what they got. So, yeah, I'm celebrating 17 years of continuous sobriety and over 35 years of my life to Alcoholics Anonymous. And your presence here tonight is my presence. But the real presence tonight is the fact we've got Chris back here, a young man that I won't say I idolize him, but by God, I look up to him and I give him all the encouragement I can to keep doing what he's doing, because he's out there kicking ass and say, if you want what we got, come do what we do. But I'll get off of that. I'm just so glad you all are here. And if you're not happy with the group you're in and you're willing to become responsible members of Alcoholics Anonymous, we've got a chair for you. Tuesday night, we study the big book. Thursday night, we study a step and chair and tradition. First 2 weeks of the month, we have speaker meeting. The last two or three, we now have a family afterward meeting. We're very family-oriented. Certainly glad you're here, and I didn't want to take up too much of your time, but I want to let you know what we are about. And Joe, when I told him what we were doing, wrote it back a little note, and he said, if every city would have one group like yours, you could make a tremendous change in the lives of many alcoholics. Those of you from Homeward Bound know exactly what that means, don't you? Those of you that have had the opportunity to hear Chris knows what that means. And I'm not going to take up any more of his time, but I want to tell you how grateful I am that you're here and how much I love you for being here. And if you ain't happy in your sobriety, come join us. We'll walk you along the path where you, by God, will be glad you're an alcoholic. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Cliff.
Take the money and pray we run out of room.
We'll start passing that basket now. At this time, I'd like to get Susan to come up here and introduce our speaker for tonight, the evil twin, Skippy. Here, Susan.
My name's Susan Dial. I'm an alcoholic. It is by the grace of God that I have been sober since September 9th, 1997.
Yeah.
And I'm very grateful and very amazed. I have the privilege and honor of introducing to you the person that introduced me to this book and to God. It is such a privilege to see so many of you here, lots of my family, and I know that many of you, based on your own experience, know that it is not an exaggeration of what I say. Chris, I've heard him speak enough to tell you that he's going to say that he does clerical work in a treatment center. And there's a part of that I want to make sure that I clarify for him. The part that he does for free and doesn't get paid for, and he also does a big book study there. And I know, again, that if you were at that treatment center, you know what I say when I say it is by the obedience that he has to these steps and the demonstrated miracles and promises in his life that I am alive and sober and free. And I would like to introduce to you my mentor, teacher, and very dear friend, Chris R. from Ingram, Texas.
You're not going to work very well back here.
Okay. They're backing me up because they know I fit.
You better get a clean shield. About midway there. Alright. And I'm going to clip you on here so you can move around. Right?
Oh, this is no good.
Oh, you're going to do a magic act?
I don't really. How am I going to get the hell out of here? I mean, it is way too many.
I know I can run faster than some of these old sons of bitches over here, but some of these young ones.
I'm almost got you.
How come they didn't have to do this? No, don't answer that question. I don't want to.
Hang on 1 second. Now I got you.
Yeah. Now, can I still stand behind the podium? I always wanted to know what it felt like to wear a fucking catheter. Well, we're off to a grand start, aren't we? Did I leave my little book over there, brother? Can you hand it to me? Because I don't want to pull anything out unloose here. My name's Chris Kramer, and I'm an alcoholic. And I'm grateful to be here. November 13th, 1987, I crawled in a room full of people that were all carrying big books. And they all started talking to me about the steps and God, and I'm going to talk about that tonight. Somebody asked me, Chris, do you get nervous before you do this? Yeah. Yeah. I want to puke. In fact, I'd rather kiss a cat's butt than do this. I just needed to share that with you. Somebody said the other day, says, Chris, you're such a passionate speaker. You love Alcoholics Anonymous. And he says, how come you're not on the circuit? You know, how come you're not out there talking to the big conferences? He says, I'm not polished enough, you know, and I think the day that I start getting that polished will be the time that'll be the time to quit for me. Because I've only got one message to share. Somebody in Big Book the other day says, God damn, you say the same thing every day. What? Well, we're on to something now, brother. It's finally clicking in what this is about. You see, because there's not a bunch of weird stuff out there. You know, there's just one message that we were given. And, you know, I got to tell you, I'm so honored to be here. I'll show you how sick this group is. This is the third time I've got to speak at an anniversary to primary purpose group. Yeah. I mean, that really, that should be indicative of how, just how sick this group is. You know, if I'm fortunate, I'm honored to get to speak anywhere, you know, once, you know, but they don't ask me back. You know, it says, Chris, we got through this one okay, thank you very much, but we don't want to do it again, you know, because the truth of the matter is some of the stuff that I'm going to say is going to be a little on the controversial side, especially in Dallas, Texas, you know, the home of Middle of the Road Solution. But I got to tell you, it's the truth. I'd like to tell you, if not, Dallas, Texas is the Sodom and Gomorrah of recovery. It is. And we can thank about 15,000 treatment centers that ground them out in about the thousands in the 70s and 80s. And they stayed local, and I guarantee you, they learned just enough about recovery to be dangerous. And they've been killing people ever since. And that's the kind of stuff I say from the podium, folks. It's probably the most controversial thing I'll say. If that doesn't bother you, then we'll get you coffee, settle down, we'll visit a little bit. I need to tell you real quick, this is like talking at my home group. You know, it's extra uncomfortable. I know so many of y'all in here. Sometimes I'll be out on the road and I won't know but one or two people in the audience. And it's a pretty cool thing because, you know, fuck you. You know, I mean, I'm going to be gone. You know, I'll be gone. It won't make any difference where. And here, you know, it's like being at home. You know, so many of you, I just need to tell my little sisters in the audience. The one with the yellow hair. This is interesting color. I need to tell you, she's single, makes lots of money. Any of you sober guys? Any of you sober guys that have a job? There you go. You have my permission. Take your best shot. She's not like some of these little girls you've been 13 stepping, though. I got to promise you that. She got a backbone in her. She'll tell you how to carry the cabbage. I got to tell you, my first sponsor's in here. Where did Don move to? Smith, stand up, Smith. This is the reason I'm sober right here. This is the reason I'm sober. Stand up, you asshole. There you go. I didn't find out until I was a year sober that he was the only one in the group I mean, he lost the bet. You know, he was like, no, I don't want to sponsor. No, nobody wanted to sponsor me. Nobody wanted to get near me, much less sponsor me. And he it was by default. You know, he was the low man on the totem pole. He didn't even have a year sober when he came in. And then, oh, unbelievable. Unbelievable. And there he is. Yeah. My current sponsor's here, Mr. Houston. Mr. Houston. And I'm so honored. Good friends, Ray, Becky. Cliff, who's my hero. Listen, folks, I'm going to tell you something real queer. Queer is the right word. I am the product, absolute product of absolute fine sponsorship. I nearly died in this fellowship. I'm going to tell you straight. Two things going into this, and we'll get cranking here. In 1980, I walked into my first room up here in North Texas. Was fixing to lose a wife. I had already lost a business, and I was fixing to lose another one. And I needed some help. The depression was choking me to death. I was taking every kind of antidepressant. We were laughing last night at Homeward Bound. Those guys had me on an antidepressant that was so big you had to use it as a suppository. I have since tried to find those antidepressants again. They're off the market. You know, they won't live it. So, y'all need to hear me. I mean, I'm not a happy camper, and I go into this meeting, you know, and I'm sitting around, you know, and here it is. I'm in 1980. I'm hip, slick, and cool. I'm in the food business. I'm working a little restaurant. I'm a big shot. I got a house. I got two VCRs. I mean, I'm rolling. I'm flush. You know what I'm saying? But I'm dying inside. I'm dying inside. And I walk into this room, and there's a bunch of people sitting around. I just dissolve in that chair. You know, I'm Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean, how lame can this get? You know, I mean, how can a guy like me manage to screw his life up so much that Alcoholics Anonymous. I hated it. I hated every person in there. And I got to tell you something, folks. But I didn't have any place else to go. And they talked to me about a lot of stuff. And I got to tell you, they did not talk to me about the big book. I didn't know what a big book was. I was around the fellowship for nearly 8 years and nearly died. Tried twice during that 8-year period to kill myself. Was unsuccessful, obviously, both times. For some of you rocket scientists that are in here, I feel compelled to spell some of this out for you. It didn't go real well for me, though, and I'm going to tell you this. And this is like a part that really grates a lot of people in AA, because everybody wants to think AA is wonderful, and it's different. And I'm telling you, the AA, the fellowship, is what saved my life. But a lot of well-meaning people nearly killed me before it took place. See? And in 1987, when I walked in the rooms of AA again after one more suicide attempt that damn nearly succeeded. One cold November night, and I walked in the room, and Smith was there, and there was Jan and Wayne, and there was the room was, there must have been 40 people back in that smoking room, and it was one of those real long shotgun rooms, a lot of table, everybody smoking. You don't want to get up too quick because you pass out all the smoke, you know. You know, it starts out just a little hazy, and then by the end of the meeting, you're down, everybody's down again. Everybody, anybody else? I mean, and I was in that room for 3 years. People ask me, do you smoke? Yeah. I go to AA. Smoking a goddamn cigarette. Unbelievable. But I got to tell you, guys, in 1980, when I first came to the meetings, what people were talking to me about, and again, I got to say this, because I work for a treatment center. I'm gonna reiterate what my buddy said, Susan said. I'm paid to do clerical work at a treatment center. When I went to work there, I made it perfectly clear that I couldn't charge for a message that nobody charged me for. I run a little store. I produce a little newsletter. We do clerical work. I call all the buckaroos. A lot of these people in this audience I know and love. I call on a daily basis, on a real regular basis. Some of them on a daily basis. Couch broke sons of bitches. They got to have a phone call from me. But, you know, we call and we try to stay in touch. But that's what I get paid for. But I'm telling you, carrying the message is why we work there. I've got 4 people that work in my department. That's all we do is carry the message of hope to Alcoholics Anonymous. If you want to work in my department, I don't care if you've got a degree. I don't care how old you are. You know the big book.
Have you had a spiritual experience? Has your life changed as a result of getting them off your dead butt and doing some work? You're eligible to work for me. See? God. I can't tell you how honored I am to be in this room tonight. You know, I'm looking around the room and there's so much fine sobriety in here. And I'm not talking about longevity. We got some long-term sobriety in here. But I'm looking at people in this room right here that have less than a year sobriety that I would send my own kid to if he needed 12-stepping. And he will. Y'all stick close. There is no question about this. It's just a matter of time. It's not when. Okay. But here's the deal. And these cats are coming out. What's so different about them? Why would you send your own kid to somebody with less than a year's sobriety? You see, that's where the message has gotten so muckety-mucked. We've gotten this thing figured out. We're pointing fingers at folks and saying, bro, you know, you can't chair a meeting until you're so many years sober. You can't sponsor until you've got this. You can't do... And the big book, of course, says none of that horseshit. None of that. This is where everybody has taken the message of hope that we were given 64 years ago and tried to put their own little twist and their own little deal. Listen, let me just say this quick before I go in here, because some of you guys are going to get grindy. I got to tell you, if you're going to pass the basket, I suggest you pass it now, okay? Either that or get somebody very big to stand at the door, because we're fixing to separate the men from the boys. I got to tell you. Guys, if you walked into a meeting, perhaps a woman's meeting, where you're there to share your intimate issues about being a woman, and you're staying sober and you're happy with that and your life has been on fire because of that, welcome. More power to you. If you're going to a nice professional meeting and sitting around and talking about insurance and this, that, and the other and sharing some of your problems about the practice and you're better for that and you're staying sober with that, welcome. But don't you even consider saying that's Alcoholics Anonymous. Because it's not. Folks, Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women in action, gathered together, shoulder to shoulder, to try to carry a message to those who have not been given the message yet. It is not anything else but that. Not now, not ever. As long as this little one-eyed sumbitch is alive and kicking. I imagine as long as Cliff's here, and Ray, and Mark Houston, and a few of you other cats out here, we're not going to let this thing go down the toilet. Because that's exactly, you know, what Cliff said set me up. I mean, what he said is exactly the truth. The fellowship that pulled me out of the toilet, that saved my life 12 years ago, it has changed right before our eyes. We sat right down, sat on our butts, and watched the whole fellowship go down the toilet. Everybody wants to sit around and talk about their collective little issues. And I'm going to hit it hard tonight about it because I'm sick and tired of hearing it. The book is pretty clear about it, folks. Let me kind of bring you up to speed on here. Maybe it's one of the reasons why I get so passionate about this. One, because when the desire to drink and drug left me, I was changed at a cellular level. It wasn't one of these deals where, you know, I just don't drink anymore. Everything in my life changed. My attitude towards life changed. My ability to be a good employee changed. Everything changed. Everything changed. The way I smelt, the way I tasted, everything changed. It wasn't just not drinking one day at a time. And that's what I've been listening to for years. Just stay sober one day at a time, one day at a time. We are minimizing the power of the program when we talk like that. Nowhere in the first 164 pages, folks, does it ever say we're going to stay sober one day at a time. It says we're going to live life one day at a time. We have set ourselves up on this very tenuous little platform that if we do everything just perfect and everything's fine in our lives and the little wifey poo get plenty of pokey pokey at home and everything's cocoa there, right? We got a good job and make lots of money. Everything's fine. The kids are well behaved. Everything's kind. Don't rock the boat for daddy because he may have a slip. Listen, they didn't talk like that back in the early days of Alcoholics Anonymous. They didn't do that. We were a spiritual fellowship. We were there to talk about God in the steps, and that's what we did. And let me tell you something. At that time, if you didn't like it, you could go hang it in your butt. You hear me? If you didn't want to talk about God, go drink. Go drink. Go get a shot of dope. You know,
in the archives that Cliff was talking about, there's some great literature out there, and we're having a big resurgence of it. Thank God for the internet. And what we're starting to see now is a lot of literature that this just regular garden variety AAers didn't get a chance to go look at. You see, because it was all garnered up in New York, kept under wraps. And now a bunch of people have gone in the fellowship and done a lot of research, and now what we're getting to see is, you know, no wonder our success rates suck today, because the message that we're getting today ain't even close to the message we were getting back then. Henrietta Seiberling, you know, the little lady that helped Dr. Bob and Bill get together, that set that whole union up, that saved my life 64 years later, she was marked as saying right after Dr. Bob died, was that 1950? When did he die? 1955? When Dr. Bob died, 1950. He got up and said, because all of a sudden what took place is, of course, Bill took complete reign. Now let me set this scenario up here for you. You got the cats over in Akron, in Cleveland, the Midwest, all working out of the big book. Oh, and by the way, they had a Bible on the podium with them. You know, they were coming out of this spiritual realm. Y'all with us? And they were talking about God in the steps. And they were having the success rates that Cliff quoted were in Cleveland. They weren't in New York. They couldn't get anybody sober in New York. The few that were staying sober were slipping and sliding like a big dog. Because Bill Wilson, the way he was approaching the cat is, oh, don't worry about doing this forever, brother. Don't worry about making a commitment. This is going to be, after all, one day at a time. And we're going to get into and do a little moral psychology with you and try to pitch you on the idea of staying sober. You know, it was all an intellect. I mean, he had his nose about this far up Carl Jung's butt. No, it's the truth. We pulled away from the Bible. We pulled away from the spiritual root of the fellowship that Dr. Bob was so in tune to. Cleveland, Ohio, they've got nearly 100% success rate. In New York, again, success rate's less than like 20%. This is in the archives, folks. Anybody who wants to look. Bill Wilson kept sneaking over to Akron. What are you guys doing over here? How come you're getting so many people sober? Y'all with us? So then old Dr. Bob dies on us, right? And Bill Wilson, now what do we do? And Henrietta gets in, and she goes on record as saying in letters, you know, what's happening is here is Bill Wilson's walking on eggshells around the drunks. We don't want to piss these drunks in this room off by talking about God. So we'll talk about a higher power. We'll talk about the doorknob. We'll wash this thing out so nobody can get sober. That's what Bill Wilson, he didn't want to rock the boat and piss anybody off. You see, Dr. Bob had a take it or leave it attitude. You're going to come in here and you're going to work these steps. You're going to get on your knees and talk to God. We're not going to tell you what God to pray to. We'll be open and roomy about that. We're not going to tell you got to be this or that or the other. But you're going to pray to something. And you don't want to do it, you go hit the door. You go hit the street. Take it or leave it. You want to sit there and argue with me about God? You're 10 minutes away from a crack pipe. Your lips are all burnt. And you want to come and tell me about God? You want to sit here and argue with me? No. 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 I'm 12 years away from a drink. Because the fight was knocked out of me. I had more than one argument with Don Smith. Don, listen, I don't have time to... Had time to go get a drink, did you?
Oh, fuck you.
Fuck you. Yes? Well, we're starting a step study. Why don't you come join us? Oh, man. You see, guys, what was different this time that was in before in 1987 when I walked in that room... A bunch of people, they got around me and loved me enough, I've said it 1,000 times, to tell me the truth. They loved me enough to tell me the truth. They didn't care if I stayed or left. They weren't there to be my friend. We became buds. Most of the people that were sitting in that room are sober today. Why? Because we were all doing the work. We were doing the steps. That's what this program is about. Why do I stay so passionate about this? This is because I work at this treatment center. It's a wonderful facility. I'm not here representing that facility. It's no better or no worse than any other facility. But I'm telling you, over a period of years, I've watched thousands of alcoholics and addicts come through that facility. What do I see? I mean, guys, this is a microcosm of the world's worst alcoholics and addicts. The people that where it wouldn't work anyplace else end up coming to our facility, and what takes place is we get a shot at them. We get one shot at them, an hour a morning, and we can light them on fire, and if I could get them to stick their beak in this book, in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and stop for just a second worrying about their little chicken shit problems. Bunch of nodding heads in here because you've done it. The miracle takes place. See, that's why I couldn't stay sober for years, folks, because I was so intent on the belief that if I could just fix my problems, I would be okay. Oh, Jesus. You know, I mean, we did this for years. I mean, through therapy and through churches and through geographical cures and the other way, I'm trying to fix my life out here so it could be nice and perfect and everything will be wonderful and then I can stay sober. This is horse shit. And you know, and we have an industry out there that wants to perpetuate this idea. Your life will never be perfect. You know, it just never will be perfect. But if you're doing this one day at a time, you can hold it together like that. Right up until the point she leaves you. Right up until the point your dad dies. Right up until the point you lose that job. And then what are you going to do? What's going to be holding your little butt? If you haven't worked the steps and haven't had the spiritual experience, there won't be anything to hold your butt. You'll fall flat fast. See, that's why I couldn't stay sober for 8 years in and out of the fellowship. Because I believe this was some kind of self-help program. Alcoholics Anonymous is not a self-help program. They may list it that way with Hazleton in the little directory, but I'm going to tell you, this book is a spiritual book of action. Every problem I have in this world can be answered through this book. Good sponsorship told me that. A pill won't do it, folks. Changing an environment is not going to do it. Warning from a doctor. The threat of imprisonment. I had all of that, folks. Nothing would stop. Because I'm the real McCoy. Cliff introduced himself. I'm a real alcoholic. I am a real alcoholic. I am the man on page 21. I am the person who had every reason in the world not to drink, not to drug. Every reason in the world. Wonderful family, plenty of love, everything going for me. Why did I continue to pull the world down on top of me? Why did I build it up and make a bunch of money and get in a good place to be successful and continue to drink until I ended up back in the dumpsters again? Why? Guys, I'm going to tell you, I went through psychiatry, I went through therapy, I am the most couch broke person in here. I got to tell you, to this day, when I pass a big leather couch, my knees just start to buckle and I just like to, I want to go lay down. Let me tell you something about myself so that you can better understand where I'm coming from. The hurt. Guys, and a lot of well-meaning doctors, I'm not knocking therapy. I'm telling you, today in recovery, therapy is the coolest. But I got to tell you, I abused those therapists, you know. And in the very best way they could, they tried to help me figure out. Well, Chris, was there a lot of poverty? Was there some abuse in your family? I had one guy, we were laughing about the other day. I had one therapist up there in Denton, Texas. I went to this guy for 6 months, and he was so convinced. Chris, are you a homosexual? After 6 months, he just wore the shit out. He wore me down, you know. And I finally said, "Doc, what is it gonna make a damn bit of difference if I tell you that I am?" I got it. Now we got something. See, that's what you keep drinking over. Now if you can just get na 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 na. No, 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 no. I'm not drinking around because of my external circumstances. You see, the book says that no matter what your present circumstances, if you'll work these steps, you'll have this spiritual experience. Come on, guys. Alcoholism is not a situational problem. It's not some kind of behavioral problem with us. Alcoholism is a disease. Some of you family members in here can absolutely understand what I'm talking about. Physically, when you put it in your body, does it trigger something that makes you want more? Yes. Have you ever gone to the bar and said, "Honey, I'm just going to have a couple." And had a couple and then had a couple more. Yes? Okay, but normal people don't do that. See, normal people go to the bar and have a couple, they have a couple. Da-da-da. Enough. See? Now then, given sufficient reason, can you leave the crap alone? Any of you cats, Ray and I have laughed about it 1,000 times, any of you cats ever laid up against that old porcelain throne? Big old cold porcelain? Right? I'd eye that little curly one right there. Then, Thank God I'm never gonna do this again. You're puking your guts out, right? And then you get up after it's all said and done, you check your beard, make sure there's no little pieces hanging on there. Ain't that the truth? That's why you're a clean-shaven man, right? Okay, but here's the deal. Any of you ever done that? And then what'd you do? You get up and say, God, I feel better. Must have been that friggin' chicken I ate. Had nothing to do with the damn chicken. God, yeah. I've told this story about my sister 1,000 times. I can hear it ringing in my ear. Finally, I get to tell it in public so she knows I'm talking about her endlessly. We'll go out to drink. No, and she's a normal drinker. She's not one of us. We'll go out to drink, and we'll have some brewskis, and I'll be watching the miracle take place. And I'm feeling that bang hit me, and I'm ready. Well, I'm going to go get another. Lisa, you ready for another drink? And she'll say, no, thank you. I'm starting to feel it. I'm not trying to be a smartass, you don't understand, but I think, isn't that the point? You're starting to feel it, so that means it's working. And I got another 20, so let's have another bit. No, you see, because we're different. I'm a part of a little 10%. I'm a part of a little group that's genetically different. Myers is just like me. God, that's a scary thought, isn't it? In this deal like this, we really are. We're truly identical because alcohol did for him the same thing. But Lisa was, she was raised in the same family we were. Was it a perfect family? No. But there was a lot of love. We never went hungry. It was a good, it was okay. Nothing wrong. But how come she didn't turn out like me? Because she's not like me. She didn't have the disease. Genetically, we're predisposed to it. However you want to explain it. This is it. I have alcoholism and she doesn't. Given sufficient reason, she can quit. Given sufficient reason, I can't quit. I've had sufficient reason. I've watched Lisa 1,000 times at dinner time send a glass of wine back. It just takes a bit off. It just takes a bit off. And she'd slide the glass. You know. Brother, I don't care if there's a cat turd floating in it. Are you with me? You take your finger like this, and you take it, and you scoop a little thing out, and you think that. Is that right? Yeah, because you see, the book means what it says. I'm not drinking because of the taste or the aroma or any of that other bullshit. On the doctor's opinion, it says we drink for the effect. Alcohol does something different in me than it does for Sister Lisa. That's just the way it is. Alcohol. Some of you family members in here are nodding your head. You understand exactly. Alcohol. If alcohol did for you what it did for us, you'd be one of us too. See? Alcohol allowed me to do things that I never could do before. And I'll never forget the first time I picked up a drink and I kicked some butt in the kitchen and I guarantee you, I said, man, this is what it's about. This is what it's about. See? And then the stuff stopped working. Why didn't they tell me that in 1980? Why didn't they explain this was a disease and that I didn't have a choice? And that I would continue to do the same shit over and over again until I died? Why didn't they explain it? Why did we spend countless meetings in Alcoholics Anonymous at lunch meetings with the steps and the traditions on the wall talking about my inner friggin' child? Why did we spend it talking about the boss, the divorce, the abuse, the rape, Vietnam, what? Taxes. Endlessly talking about crap that's got nothing to do with nothing. I'm going to say it again real clearly, and I hope some of you guys in here will hear it. I know that the taxes and the traffic and the divorce and the rape and Vietnam, I know all of those things affected you.
But they did not cause you to drink alcoholically. If it did, you're not one of us and you need to go away. You're a hard drinker. You need to go find a good therapist. You need to get the hell out of my way. We are not here because of situations, folks. Why do people come into my facility? When they come into the hospitals, I know other people in here are affiliated with hospitals, and you'll see them. They'll come in and drive in a big old limo and come up to the front door, and guy will get out of the car in a big old limo, and he pissed his pants. He's a mess. He walks into SEU, and they start processing him, you know, try to get him into this hospital, right? And some old boy will pull up the pickup and just slow down just long enough to let the woman out of the back end of the pickup. There you go, bitch. Seen it 1,000 times. Tragic. She hits the pavement with her bags in both hands. She says, well, here I am. No job. Obviously no husband. 10,000 problems going on. Everything in the world to drink over. She's got the same chance of getting sober as the millionaire. Y'all with me? Last time I was in Houston a couple of months ago, we were at a Cocaine Anonymous conference down there in Houston, and I stopped. I got something to eat, and I pulled the rental car up next to the 7-Eleven. I was telling some of you cats about this. I'll try to be quick. I'm always quick. What the hell? I'll try to slow down. No. And I pulled up in front of this little store in Houston, Texas. And it's Ingram, Texas, where I'm from. We don't have any of this kind of stuff going on. You pull up in Ingram, Texas, go get gas, there's a sheep there. You know, it's like, this is real. And if it's a particularly good-looking sheep, well, there we go. Can you give me that coffee? Sheep buckaroo. You know, we see them 1,000 times in the city. We've seen them while we've been here in Dallas. And I'm just ready for him, you know, because I mean, I'm not going to argue with that nonsense. People say, well, don't give him any money. He's just going to buy booze. And duh. You know, so what? You know, who died and left you king of the... Give some bitch a dollar. You know, what's it to you? I flipped him a couple and went on inside. I come back out. And he's back up against the warm side of the wall, right? You've done it 1,000 times. Back up against the warm side, out of the wind, right? Winter time. Out of the wind, got a bottle cracked, taking him a big old pull, look on his face. Now, when he came to the car, he was irritable, restless, and discontent. He was a little uncomfortable. Quick, you know what I mean? A little jerky. Myers knows that. Myers, I used to work for Myers at the binder, and he'd get on the PA, he'd see me, and I'd be real dumb. He'd shake my hand, and he'd say, cancel Mr. Raymer's surgery for the day, you know. I'd be back to sleep on the floor. Fuck you, you know. I'd get a little quick. I'd be laying up against the wall like this, right? And this guy's got this big old grin on his face. It's like, he's okay. Because you see, what happened was, the drink was not the problem. The drink's the man's solution. Y'all with me? And pat him on the little head and say, buddy, have a good day. Stay safe. I get in my nice rental car, drive back to my nice hotel that's already paid for, with tears in my eyes, because I had never had it so good. I've never had it so good. I'm not this excited about an experience I had 12 years ago, folks. Every day is a spiritual experience. I keep saying, God, when is the miracle going to stop? When am I going to wake up and be back in the dumpster? I get back to this conference, right, and I get a phone call from a nice lady that's supposed to meet me at the conference, a cocaine addict. Her mom calls all in tears. She's done it again. Uh-huh. Surprise, surprise. I left her for 20 minutes. She was going to get ready to come down to that conference. She went across the street, wrote one of my checks, tried to bounce a check over there, and go get more cocaine. I came back. She's firing it up in my living room. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Cocaine's not her problem. Cocaine's her solution. Alcohol's not her problem. Alcohol's her solution. Folks, we're sitting in a room full of people, and everybody wants to say that alcohol is the problem, and the cocaine is the problem, and the pills are the problem. That is not. That is our solution. When I drink, I get better, not worse. It's the hardest thing for people to don't understand. Why in the hell do you think I'm driving that old piece of shit pickup truck? Because I'm making some kind of fashion statement here? I'm doing it because I can't afford a new one. I could if I would stop drinking, but I can't stop drinking because I must have the alcohol to get through the damn day. This is not about behavior, folks. We're not acting out poorly. You're just, I just want to scream if people want to throw this at it. They always want to take blame for our drinking and drugging. Oh, it must have been Vietnam. Oh, it must have been this. It must have been that. It's horseshit. It's garbage.
You either are an alcoholic or you're not. If you could quit on a non-spiritual basis, you're not an alcoholic. Again, you need to go someplace else. Go to the gym. I don't know. I'll see you there. Let me say this. You're welcome in Alcoholics Anonymous. You're welcome to come in and visit. You're welcome to drink the coffee. You're welcome to date the women. Do whatever you want to do. But keep your goddamn mouth shut, because you're killing people. No, your opinions in Alcoholics Anonymous are why the success rates are so low today. Well, I just feel like I just needed to share this one thing that happened to me today. We don't give a rat's butt. No, you need to hear it. If you're not sharing something positive, you need to shut your mouth. We've got enough pissing and moaning in Alcoholics Anonymous today to kill a whole bunch of people. Picture this. Let me tell you this little story. I'm in Ohio. I'm up in Ohio. I got a chance to go to Dr. Bob's house. It was the coolest. But I'm speaking up there in Toledo. And they take me to this special Saturday meeting. They said, this is a great closed meeting. You need to come over to this meeting. And so I walk into this meeting, and there's 60 people. And they've got a basket kind of like this sitting on the table, literally this big. And it's full of court papers. Okay? Now, they really have it. I hear people in Dallas, when I was up here, we had a problem with that. But what kind of a problem is that? You got 60, the captive audience. They can't go anywhere. You know, you got the damn sheets. They're going to be here. Now that I said, I'm getting excited. I said, we got a chance to talk to these cats about the steps. We got a chance to pull them with a vision of how cool life can be in sobriety. Somebody started talking about the four step. Oh, this is the coolest. How would you like to know today how to not carry around all of that resentment that you've been carrying around all your life? How would you like to find a way past the stuff that's been gnawing a hole in your gut? The shit you've been drinking over forever? How would you like to be able to drop it just like that? I'm excited. This is going to be great. The first lady in there. Well, I'm resentful of my husband. You know, I brought them babies back last night, and I'll admit I was about 30 minutes over the time I was supposed to have them back, you know, but he made a big stink about it. Now, I came to pick him up this morning. He won't let me have them babies. Divorce case going. You with me? Oh, honey, I know exactly what you're talking about. Listen, my husband did. And I'm starting to say, God damn it, it's happening in Ohio too. I thought this was just in Texas. It's not. It's all over the country. Every place I speak, it's the same thing. Oh, honey, let me tell you what you're in. And I'm sitting there, listen. Lady, pick your hand up. She didn't even need to introduce herself. She's obviously one of the group's poobas. She's sitting in the big old... She put that old easy chair back. She's in an easy chair in an AA meeting, right? She kicked that old easy chair back. She's sitting there, got that big old fucking cigarette sticking out of her mouth. Well, let me tell you, big graduate, because we're all waiting, you know, when's the time to go? You know, it's like she puts the cigarette out. Everybody's waiting. And she shares with us. Well, this is what you should do. This is what you need to do to get even with that guy. Of course, everybody's laughing. They think that's just great. Listen, guys. Let me tell this. I hear this sound like this. And I look on my blind side. You could dial her and I'd never see you. You know, and I look over, I look over to the sound, and there's a little guy. He's one of the cats that put a sheet up there because I saw him when he came in. He looked just like me. Crappy posture, really raggedy, looking, hadn't shaved in ages, little holy, one of those friggin' Free of the Loom t-shirts, you know, little blue Free of the Loom t-shirt. Just me, 12 years ago. Me, classic, 12 years ago. His head was sitting on the counter. I said, patted him on a little back, little bony back. And I said, buddy, I said, what's up? And he said, it's the same. Every fucking time it's the same. The meeting wasn't quite over. They did ask for burning desires. I took a gamble being that far away from Texas. But the lady that sits in the little cheeky easy chair, she's sitting a little different today than she did back then. Because I ate her ass out. Listen, folks, just like some old-timer did to me when I walked into the Lewisville group, and just like I see Cliff doing, and just like so many of you others in here, you stand for something. What does the book say? The book says in the third step prayer that God's going to remove our difficulties so that victory over those difficulties can bear witness to God's power. It says that we, as recovered alcoholics, not recovering alcoholics, sons of bitches need to finish working the steps. You know, then you'll recover. You dig? Recovered alcoholics, as recovered alcoholics, here's what takes place. I have an absolute duty to myself, to the group, to God, to the very Creator that removed the obsession for me to drink. I have the it's my job. The book said I got a new employer. I'm supposed to carry the message of hope to a newcomer. I don't get into your squabbles. I don't want to know about your divorce. I don't want to get involved in all of that business. If you've got a sponsor and you need somebody to talk to, great. I want to tell you this. We got therapists dying all over this country from lack of work. You need to go call one of those therapists and let them help you with those problems. Because we're sick and tired of hearing them in IAA meetings. We're not equipped to deal with it. We are not professionals. The information coming out of all, everybody, y'all seen the miracle a thousand times. You walk into an AA meeting, it's a damn open discussion meeting, and here it comes. All the junior lawyers and junior therapists sitting on the front row waiting for somebody to puke on the table so that we can clean up the mess. We got to stop this business, folks. We're killing alcoholics forever. You know what we're telling these alcoholics? That the reason that they're drinking is because of that divorce. The reason they're drinking is because of that husband. They're not drinking because of that. They're drinking because of the illness. How are they going to recover? They're going to work the steps and have a spiritual experience. Guys, you got an opportunity to tell us to see it in a big room full of 60 people, but did we do that? No. We talked about every little chicken shit problem in the world. Everybody wants to come up after the meeting and take exception with this. Well, Chris, there was a time when if I hadn't had a chance to talk about this in a meeting, I'd have drunk. You're going to drink anyway. That's an authentic fact. You're going to drink anyway. Come on, guys. One more time, we're operating back on the premise that if everything goes smooth in your life, you can stay sober. Everything is not going to go smooth in your life. This is about God, folks. God says you're going to bear witness. I'll say it and get out of here. Cliff said it again. Ever since I've met the man, he said, you have one responsibility, to carry the message of hope to the newcomer. You know when I continue to hear it on the fellowship? I keep hearing this thing. Well, I'm working my program to the best of my ability. Uh-huh. That's why you're back in treatment, huh? Mm-hmm. Listen, let's cut to the chase here, folks. The only thing you ever did to the best of your ability was get a shot of dope. Get some alcohol. You did that to the best of your ability, didn't you? I never forget the time up in Denton, Texas, when I was living up there, and my first wife, she said, Chris, did you put antifreeze in your truck? Nope. She said, Chris, you better go put antifreeze. I said, honey, have you looked outside? It's freezing out there. That's on the windshield is sleet. Well, I'm not going out anywhere. Chris, I'll see you tonight. She drove off to work. I opened the refrigerator. 2 beers. Duh, shit. Man, I better go get some antifreeze. Another case? No. I got to tell you that time, honest to God, I looked at my billfold and I had just enough money for a 12-pack of beer. I did not have enough money for antifreeze. The truck did not get antifreeze. The block did break. We got to haul that truck to the dump. Where were my priorities? I need something to drink. You with me? And until that obsession is removed, folks, I will continue to drink. And it won't be about love for you. And it won't be about loving that woman or loving my family or loving them kids. It'll be that I need to do what I need to do to get through the damn day. That's alcoholism and that's drug addiction. And folks, let me tell you something. It is devastating to watch. You will drink it right into the grave. The cats come into the facility. They're on a waiting list to get a new liver, right? All they got to do is stay sober and they'll get a new liver. And they believe that the fear of getting pulled off that list is going to be enough to keep them sober. And yet, 2 weeks later, we find out they're drunk again. You know, everybody wants to let them off the hook. Oh, isn't that terrible about so-and-so? God, gee, he must not have dealt with that childhood of origin issue. Oh, shit! That's actually, you know what he didn't do? When we gave him the number of the primary purpose group in Dallas, Texas, he didn't make the first phone call. He looked at the deal and said, no, shit, I live over in Irving. I can't drive over the primary purpose. It's too far. He didn't work anything to the best of his ability. His mind said, I'm not the real alcoholic. I'm not the real drug addict. My case is different. Next time, it'll be different. And he's dead today. I can't tell you how many people I've watched come to that facility and walk off campus and die. Hundreds of them. They wonder why, Chris, you get so passionate. They wonder why I get stand on the podium and cry. Because there were people just like you who had every chance to do it, but they walked back into a bunch of meetings in Dallas, Texas, where they were talking about everything under the sun except this. Well-meaning people, people with sobriety that should have known better, didn't. They didn't say anything. They were more afraid of hurting your sensitive little feelings than they were about whether or not you were going to die or not. So when you opened your mouth to share a bunch of crap, and some son of a bitch started hitting on you and 12-stepping you, 13-stepping you, and said this happened and that happened, nobody said anything. All live and let live. Folks, that's not what my book says. That's a chicken shit one-liner that somebody else came up. My book is very clear in the first 164 pages. It says, I am my brother's keepers. It is my responsibility if this man stays sober. Because by working with him, not only do I get to stay sober, I got a brother in the fellowship that will help me get somebody else sober. That's how this thing works. It doesn't work by osmosis, folks. Here, picture in your little mind, we don't have it up here tonight, picture in your little mind a circle and triangle. There's a thought that Will Thomas told me not long ago. Y'all know unity and recovery and service. Y'all know the circle and triangle. But here's what it is. The circle and triangle, the triangle represents what this program is about. God's grace is at the pinnacle. God's grace comes into me. Left-hand corner. Right? Then it goes through a person on the right-hand corner. You with me? And then it cuts back up to God. The way it comes back to God is through another person. It doesn't come back to God just through me. Thank you, God. Thank you, God. Don't you think God gets tired of listening to that? You know, listen, I got to tell you something. There ain't a woman in the world that I love more than my wife. And that's a fact. But I try to show her ever so often by my actions. I don't deal with a bunch of chicken shit one-liners. Honey, easy does it. Jeannie, I'm going to love you one day at a time. No, I don't think she'd go that way. You know what I'm saying? Come on, guys. We don't do it like this. She judges me by my actions. Why do I have so many women friends in this fellowship? Because I generally try to treat them with respect and dignity. I love them as sisters in the fellowship. Would I like them or less them? Yes, some of them I would. I need to. Yes. But here's the deal. With God's power, not only do I have to drink today, I don't have to cheat on my wife. My life has changed completely as a result of this spiritual experience. What goes around, that's my cue to start winding it down. If I fill up a whole half, I'm getting long-winded. No, about 459, a couple of months ago, they had this article. This is a publication that New York produces from their inner group. And they were talking about, had different interviews with different inner groups around the country. And they were talking about the different problems these inner groups were having. And they interviewed the cats from the Dallas inner group and the New York inner group and a bunch around the Japanese inner group. But the central theme of the problem that they were having, and here it is, guys, in a nutshell, while we're in trouble. They were having trouble finding volunteers to do 12-step work. The cat in New York said, you know, it's nothing unusual for us to have to call 12 alcoholics to find one that will take a 12-step call. It just blows me out of the water. In the story, up in the front of the story, it talks about, in the prefaces where we're reading, it talks about Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob got sober, right? And right after Dr. Bob got sober, June 10th, they frantically looked for another drunk to work with. They ended up finding Bill D as a damn lawyer, for Christ's sake. We should have stopped then, I guess, but some bitch stayed sober. No, he got sober like that. Never to drink again. And what it is this franticness. The first early people in Alcoholics Anonymous, that was their job. Okay, so you're here now? So now our job is to get sober, now to go help this guy get sober. And it's like, oh, and by the way, we'll work on this other stuff too, and we'll help you get a job, and we'll do all the other cool things. But our job is to go help somebody else stay sober. To allow them to work the same steps that we're doing so that sanity will return, so that they will know peace and comfort like they've never known before. so they can get excited about their life again and stop killing themselves and every person around them. But we're too busy to go work for somebody else. Can you believe that? Somebody calls you on the phone and you're too busy to go do a 12-step call. I got to tell you straight. My treatment center, anybody that comes back to Dallas, Texas, walks out with a piece of paper like this with primary purpose address on here. There's a lot of other great groups in Dallas, Texas. I'm not pitching, but I'm partial to this one because I know what they do. What do? They have a couple of big book studies, and then on Friday night, they go take the message of hope to somebody else. Why does Cliff Bishop take a meeting down to the 24-hour club every Saturday afternoon? Are you still doing that, Cliff?
Yeah.
What's the matter? Are you afraid you're going to relapse or what? Could it possibly be that your life is better than it's ever been before and that you've got a connection with a power that absolutely thrills you to death and you feel like you need to pass that on to somebody else? Guys, it's a sense of duty. I don't feel pain. I don't feel the obsession to use on a daily basis. I can come and go as I please. I can go listen to great music. I can go into the art galleries where they serve liquor. And I'm not jonesing. I'm not a prisoner of that stuff anymore. I was set free 12 years ago. I have a responsibility to go share that. What's a Friday night going down to Homeward Bound and talking to the folks down there about the miracle that has taken place with us? What is so precious about your life that you can't find a place to go to? Salvation Army needs you? Halfway houses all over this place need somebody to take buses, need somebody to drive, an opportunity to get out of yourself and give back a little bit to this world. That's all God has asked any of us to do. Give back a little bit. The book says it, folks. We're the most selfish and self-centered people on earth. Selfishness and self-centeredness, that's the root of our problem. I can quote you the rest of the page. I read it so much. I'm susceptible to it today. We buried two people last week out of our facility. Two people. Great people. Good eggs. Who believed their case was different. Who believed they were so complicated that they couldn't take time out of their day to go carry the message of hope to somebody else. You pick up some big books, folks, and you start carrying this message. You do what you're supposed to do. That's it. Nobody's asking you to preach. Nobody's asking you to carry the message like me. The book says that we're supposed to carry our message. The message is the same on page 17, our common solution. But you're going to do it in your way. You're not going to do it like Chris Raymer or Cliff. You're going to do it in your own way, but the message is going to be the same. Y'all with us? I've said this, I think, 1,000 times when I've spoken from the podium. I'm drawn back to it. You've got to understand that everything that goes around does come around. Why were we spared? You've got to get it. I mean, folks, 1976, I'm eating out of dumpsters in Houston, Texas. I've tried to commit suicide on more than one occasion. Guys, but why was I spared? Why wasn't I killed in the crack house? Why didn't I die of alcoholic poisoning? When I started puking blood back in the 80s, why was there somebody there to take me to the hospital? Why do I live? Why do you live? Because there's a reason. There's a reason, and the reason is sitting next to you. The reason are the people out here on the streets of Dallas that are dying tonight because they're not hearing the message. And here's what we have to do. We have to do what the book asks you to do, to carry the message of hope back into our meeting. Folks, that's it. Am I saying your lives are going to be perfect? No. Folks, let me tell you something. My life is not perfect. My life is far from perfect. There's things that I would like to change, but it's so much better than it's ever been, I don't know what to tell you. My job in a meeting is not to tell you how fucked up my life is. My job is to tell you how wonderful it is, to pull you with a vision so that you can get through the day. I love it when I cuss them from the podium, you know, and watch some of you guys get so tweaky on it. Get your sanctimonious ass up, you know? You need to hear what I'm saying here. I had a taper down in Georgetown. So Chris, we'd like to get you to speak down through the South. You know, one of our circuit speakers will advertise you and you'll get you on a little deal. You'll see it, but you're going to have to cut. Watch this line. I don't know about the cussing. You know, I'm getting better at it. I can promise you that. That's hard to believe. That's hard to believe. But understand what I'm saying. The lady on the street down here, about 6 miles from here, back across the bayou, is hooking now to get some cocaine and get some alcohol so she can get through the day. I don't think she gives a rat's ass how much I cut. We need to get back down in the trenches, guys. We need to get some puke on us. We need to start understanding what this is about. There but for the grace of God goes I. Number one death rate right now in AA, what I just got recently, the elderly. Why? Everybody wants to let the elderly off the hook. Oh, well, he's old. So? Come on, guys. We got jobs to do. Women, it's the toughest. Where are we going to find women sponsors? You know, we know you're out there. Room's full of you. But in a meeting next week, when the bus pulls up and all the women start getting off from the treatment centers, where are you? You're home fixing dinner for hubby. How nice for you. I'm going to do you the same way that my sponsor did me. Where'd you get that nice house? Where'd you get that husband? Where'd you get that nice car? Where'd you get the job? Where'd you get the big fat diamond on your finger? Where'd you get the peace and contentment? God? Mm-hmm. What have you done today to show that you're appreciative of that gift? I mean, this is hard stuff. This is cold-blooded stuff. I'm telling you, folks, we need to stop holding the book up as a carrot. I've said it before. You know, we hold them up. Don't you want... We read the promises at the end of the night, their promises. Don't you want these promises? Don't you want these promises? Come with us and get the promise. We got to stop this shit. Folks, this is a little ruler. We're going to start measuring. How far have you come? How many of these promises have taken place in your life? And if they haven't all taken place, and you've been sober longer than a week, I want to ask you straight, point blank, in your face, why haven't they? What excuses are you using today to keep you from God? My friend Cliff Hodge out of California talks about it all the time. Jesus Christ, when are we going to stop making excuses for why we're not experiencing God's grace? Folks, I know everyone in this room is not in a good place. I know some of you are hurting like a big dog tonight. I'm sorry. I'm going to tell you this straight out. I don't know what you need to do. I'm going to tell you this. Most of the people in here, therapists, counselors, clergy, they don't know what you need to do either. I can assure you this, that God does know what you need to do. God does know what you need to do. Obviously, I'm preaching to the choir.
Yeah.
No, but y'all understand. That's why we work the steps. I don't work the steps because I like to make. I work the steps to get connected to God, so that God, on a daily basis, every morning, roll over, look at Jeannie, listen to her breathing, say, God, thank you. What do you got for me today? What do you got for me today? This program ain't about justice, folks. I'd never have a woman like that if this was about justice. I'd never have my little kid. I'd never have this room full of friends. If this was about justice, I'd be in prison. Only thing different from me and some of y'all, I didn't get caught. And I had a better lawyer. y'all with me? So here's the deal, and I'll wind her down. Here's the deal. The reason that we see so many people relapsing in fellowship is that God does what God says He's going to do. Third step prayer again says that God's going to remove your difficulties. And what happens with so many of us out here, we begin to do the work, we actively participate, the miracle takes place, the desire to drink and drug leaves us, and we sit on our ass and get comfortable. Thank you, God, for the wonderful life you give us. Instead of staying on the fine line of life like the book asks us to do and continue to give back and continue to keep that thing moving, we stop and we sink to the bottom again. And get sick just as fast as we got well. Folks, Bill Wilson worked the steps in about 7 or 8 days. He was in his 9th day in Towns Hospital when he had his barn-burning spiritual experience. Bill Wilson was a little less than 2 weeks. Bill D., they worked him through in 7 days. Folks, I just read it again. The first 100 people, there was none of this take your time to work the steps, none of this 6 months to do a friggin' 4-step. You worked the steps, and in just a few days, you got to the other side. The obsession to use was removed from you as promised, and you went out there and kicked butt and took names. That's why our success rates were so high. Everybody that wants to take exception with this are the people that are not doing the work. No, it's the truth. It's the absolute truth. Everybody wants to say, well, well, my sponsor has got me doing an extended fourth step, and this is going to take a little longer than we anticipate. Fire the sponsor and get another sponsor. Fire somebody that understands what this is about. If you think you've got time to lollygag with this, you need to come back to Homeward Bound with us this evening and look at the cats that are in there now. No, but I mean, really? Some of you guys need to wake up and smell the world. You need to go down to the goddamn 24-hour club and watch the cats that are sleeping on the concrete. They're not sleeping on a blanket, folks. They're sleeping on the concrete and damn glad to have it. You think you've got time to fuck with this? You think you've got time to mess with this? Well, my sponsor, we're going to get together next month to do that this day. You missed the boat. The book says that we seek the solution with the desperation of a drowning man. We don't have time to wait for you to catch up with us. Everybody's always in my face. Chris, slow down, slow down. You speed up. That's it. Real quick, I'll close. Henrietta D., Bill D.'s wife, right? There was a couple of Henriettas floating around back then. This was back in 1935 when Bill D. got sober, the lawyer guy. When he got sober, then Henrietta started going to the beginnings, the rudimentary stuff of Al-Anon today. And some of the stuff that they got through Ann Smith was this, very simple. And it's in the archives. It's written down. She said, our job as wives, family members of alcoholics, and our job as the alcoholic are to do one thing, and that's get connected to God. That's it. See, you get connected to God and the rest of this stuff will fall into place. The book says it on a dozen pages. You get connected to God, God will get you connected to the money. Don't get sanctimonious with me, folks. Life is about money. You've got to have some money in your pocket. God did not put me on this earth to be poor. He put me on this earth to have the things that I needed. God gave me that high-dollar bicycle I've got in my deal. What do you think He wants me to be? He loves me enough to give me what I need and then some of the things I want. You with me? Our job is to get connected to God. And if you'll get connected to a bunch of people, I know in this group, I know some other groups around where they're talking about the literature. Stay away from the open discussion meetings. What the shit are we discussing? There's only one message in Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's out of this book. Get hold of a sponsor that understands this book and the literature. If you have not had a spiritual experience, if you're not this excited about life, if you're not feeling pumped about your experience, you need to get with somebody because you're shortchanging yourself. You're shortchanging yourself. God intended for us to be happy, joyous, and free. The Bible talks about it. This book talks about it. If you're not, ask yourself why you're not. It's not about the husband. It ain't about the job. Where are you with God today? That's all it boils down to. In prayer and meditation, to bring it current. When you get home tonight, and you sit quiet in your room, and you put your cigarette on the side of the bed there and drink your last little sip of coffee, where are you with God today? Are you comfortable inside and happy to be alive? If you're not, please don't be pissed at me. Don't be mad at Mark, Ray, Cliff, Myers, Susan, don't be mad at these cats. They're doing the work. They're happy, joyous, and free. Folks, we're pulling you with a vision. I smell more, just like Mark said, like he told me, just like Don told me 12 years ago, out in the back of Lewisville group. Don't you want to live a different life, Chris? He told me, he may not even remember, he told me one night, he said, Chris, I'm just like you. I've picked up more friggin' desire chips than you can carry out of here in a bushel basket. Aren't you tired of being a fucking newcomer? Come on, guys. I'd have been around the fellowship for 8 years at that time. 8 years, and I'm still a newcomer. I'm still got a brand new desire chip. Don't you want to put a little sobriety together? Mm-hmm. He said, then let's work these steps. You can date the girl. You go get the job. You do what you want to do. But at 6 o'clock, you're ours. 6 o'clock, you come here. And we're going to carry a message out to the treatment center. And we're going to answer the phones in the front.
We're going to go look for some drunks to work with. The drunk would come in the room and he'd say, go get him. I said, no. No, I said, say, how would you go get him? You're the man with damn near a year. I mean, I'm 2 weeks sober. What do I got to give? Chris, do you want to get 3 weeks? Okay, I'm gone. And I'd go get the guy. And that's the way it worked. He didn't let me sit on my ass. And I got to tell you, Don left that group, and I didn't see him for a while. And I got a guy named Phil as a sponsor. And Phil had 15 years at the time. He's over 20 now. I mean, he's kicking butt and taking names. And when I moved to Kerrville, I immediately got Mark as a sponsor. I believe sponsorship is the key to everything, folks. Good sponsorship will change your life forever. Bad sponsorship will kill you. Get your ego out of the way. If you don't have a good one, find one. It's just about the work. That's all it's about. I'm so honored to be here, folks. So honored to be here. Check out that little cookie with a little patch. Now that's pretty cool. That's it. I gotta go.